I'm a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
Welcome back to another episode of the Cue It Up podcast. I personally am extremely excited for this week. We have the Terminator, Niels Fine, joining us for the show today. Niels, how's it going?
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. And it seems only fitting to bring you on right after I actually just had Alex, because I think about half of that interview, we just talk about the relationship that you two had, and he credited a lot of his game and a lot of his knowledge, actually, to your battles growing up through the game.
That goes two ways because me and Alex, even to this day, if we're playing, we can play for a shoelace and we just want to kill each other like friendly wise right at the pool table, and we have these unbelievable battles, especially in one pocket where it just goes 3-2, 2-3, 3-2, and we just had great battles, and we're very challenged by each other's games, and I think we have the utmost respect for each other's games. So it's great to grow up with somebody that's so close to your own level, even to this day. So I still take trainings from him, you know. Every session I learn like one or two shots, and he works me out really hard, and it's great to have somebody like that in your corner now and then. It's awesome.
Yeah, definitely. So We got to interview with Alex, and we got to hear all about the origins of his pool game. And I'm curious to know the origins of yours, since you grew up in the same area as Alex. So why don't you take us through the life of a young Niels and tell us how you got involved into the game and what really got you hooked?
Well, when I was a youngster, it started out with snooker. I was tuning into, I think, BBC at the time, and I think I saw Jimmy White and Stephen Hendry battle it out. And I was like, whoa, this is really cool. And there was a snooker room close by in The Hague. And a friend of my parents actually played snooker. So he took me to a snooker hall one of those days. And it was like murky, big tables. You know, I'm 11 years old. So it was super exciting. And I can remember this one shot. I'm right-handed. And I had the cue ball on the right long rail and an object ball on the right long rail. And I couldn't reach it, of course, because I'm right-handed. And I said, hey, can I lay on the table and hit the shot? He says, yeah, go ahead. So I hit the shot and I fell off the table. I can remember it. I rolled off the table. And he cracked up, of course. So then I went to this snooker hall, got going there. And then after a while, when I really started becoming a teenager, 15, 16, I got a little bit bored with it. I was playing like Sunday tournaments, but I didn't have any finances and any sponsorship to go play national events. So I was kind of stuck in the area and playing these weekend tournaments. Plus I was just a little bit fed up with it at the time. And a friend of mine actually played both games. He played snooker and pool. And he said, well, come with me. There was this nightclub with four pool tables. And we started hanging out there, and I just loved it. I just fell in love with it. And then about 6 months later, Hague 5 opened up in The Hague, which is a very known club right now. And they opened up, and I joined in, and I quit playing snooker right there. And then, so I was about 17 back then. So Johan Ruysink was there. Alex Lely was there. I was there, and like the best players in The Hague. And we started doing trainings, and we didn't know that much back then, so we were teaching each other and watching videos, stuff like that. So around 20, I said, okay, I really want to have a go at this. And that's when I went to the States. I got a visa. I visited Joe Kerr, who in the 80s ran the Pro Tour, and I visited him for 2 weeks, and it was probably the best 2 weeks of my pool life ever. I thought I was going there to do drills and work out. And day one, he said, you're playing this guy for 20 a set. And I had $300 on me. So I was like, okay. And it was like, do this or go back home, right? There's no, it was the only way. Yeah, it was like, this is what you're going to do. You got to toughen up and start playing. So I was playing 10 hours a day, tournaments, watching videos. It was amazing. And every day I got better and better. And I really felt deeply that that's what I wanted to do with my life, you know, like play professional pool. And I did that for a couple of trips, 6 months trips, also by myself. And then when I turned 23, it was time to say goodbye to that and really join the tournament circuit in Europe. So I turned full pro back when I was 23 and really hit the tournament circuit and built it up from there. You know, get into the matchroom events, build a name for yourself, get sponsors, and go that route.
It's just absolutely crazy to think that out of this pool hall, you have Alex Lely, yourself, and Johan.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of Moscone Cup wins, the amount of World Pool Master wins, the titles that came out of that pool room for just you three players. And, of course, the titles with Johan are a little bit different, right? Because he's not a player. But he's had a direct impact on, I mean, name me a European player out of the last 20 years that Johan hasn't helped in some sort of way. I don't think that there's any pool hall in the world that has had more champions come out of it. Maybe you can think of one? I don't.
Yeah, out of one little room, yeah. We started with six tables, and if I think back, there was the lights were just the worst lights on the planet. We were playing really tough equipment, no air conditioning, and, you know, we were experimenting. We were doing breaks, techniques we were trying to copy Archer's break, then Strickland's break, then Boosty's break. We didn't have anybody telling us what to do, you know what I mean? We're just experimenting. And it was an exciting time. Looking back at it now, I mean, you could knock off 7 years from your learning curve by all the amount of stuff that's online now that you can watch. But it was you know, that was our story. That's the way we did things, and it was a great time, very exciting.
Yeah, the late 90s, early 2000 breaks hit it as hard as you possibly can and hope for the best. That was a lot of exciting pool.
Yeah, exactly.
And now you players have this rack down so methodically. I mean, you can go up and check the rack, and you can see where the gaps are, and just you're choosing between six, seven different breaks based off of where the gaps are. It's so figured out to a science now.
Yeah, it's a little bit of shame if you ask me personally. Of course, I'm more of a veteran player now with age 43, but you know, I come from that era, like you say, like we had to smack him to make balls, and I think there was more charm to the game back then than with all this control break stuff and people just playing position all the time. It loses a little bit of the charm of 9-ball and 10-ball, I think, personally. So it could be made a little bit tougher again, in my opinion.
Yeah, the equipment. And it's a testament probably to the equipment, right? The equipment is so good these days that you're able to really control all of these variables on the break. And, you know, you're always making the wing ball in 9-ball. If you're not making the wing ball, you're making the one to the side, depending on whether it's 9 in the spot or 9 on the, you know, the one on the spot. And the equipment is so perfect that you're able to control all these things. It does take away that randomness and the excitement out of the break.
Yeah, because for instance, I was playing a small tournament in Copenhagen last week, and me and Andreas Metz were playing in the final. It was like one match a week, and it was running for about 4 weeks. So we ended up in the final, and it was a humid day, warm, and we were playing a race to 11, and we were not making balls on the break, and we were coming up with illegal breaks. But it was fascinating because we had to do so many push-outs and work for so many shots, and we had a hard time, but it was actually a fantastic pool, you know? I mean, it wasn't just, okay, the wing ball goes in, one's over the corner, and we're breaking and running out 6 out of 11. It was really like we broke and ran maybe one or two racks total, and it was just battling it out for every opportunity. I thought it was fantastic. Andreas won the match, and it was a big grind, but I thought, like, this was really – and this was cool, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All aspects of the game were – we're coming out of the box, so to speak.
For sure. So you've had just a crazy, historically amazing career. Like, I think if you retired today, not that you're going to, so don't do that because I like watching you play, but you've had World Pool Masters win, you've been a world champion, you've won I think 8 Moscone Cups, if I'm not mistaken. You've won more Moscone Cup MVPs than any player in history. You've done just about everything, right? I mean, is there still a title out there that you wish you could win? The U.S. Open.
Yeah, U.S. Open's not on the list, my man. No, I had a great run at the Open. I never got to the finals. I got 3rd, 4th, 5th, 7th, 9th, 12th, every number in the book, but I never got to the finals. And I had my chance that year with me and Thorsten playing it out to get in the finals against Gabe Owen. And I was 5-4 up on Thorsten, and he played really strong in the second half of the match, and he ended up in the finals, and Gabe won the tournament. I think it was in 2003 or 2004. So that was the furthest I've gotten in that event. So I still want to get that one on the list. But yeah. Thanks for the compliment anyway.
What would that mean to your career? If you, in your opinion, what do you think that would do to your career? The legacy of it.
That's not really for me to say, but it would be, the super icing on the cake for me personally, because I've been chasing that title for so many years. And I've always thought that it was one of the best events on the planet, with the format, the double elimination, the excitement of the tournament. It was always, especially when it was in Chesapeake back then, with the high ceilings and the atmosphere in that room was just unbelievable. And it was just a highlight for me to come there every fall. Nice weather, great matches. It would get you inspired to perform at your best.
For sure. So then, looking back at your career, which win meant the most to you?
Oh, definitely the world title, because I won the world straight pull title, I think, in 2007. And I didn't get really that much recognition for it because, A, it wasn't like nine ball. Nine ball is just the king's number, the whatever you call it. It's the biggest event, right? The world nine ball. And I got into a couple of finals of major tournaments. The China Open, Thorsten played great. I got to the finals of the Qatar Open. Okulo played great. So I had some runner-up finishes. And then I got 2 runner-ups back-to-back at the world eight ball. And one final was against Carl Boyes, 12-11. And another one against Orkulo again. So this was really like hurting me, right? I was playing great. I was getting to the final, but I, for some reason, I couldn't get over the hump. And then on top of that, I started to get some criticism from like Billiard Digest and people like saying like, you haven't won enough big ones. And this really stung. And I said, something awoke in me. I said, I have to win this freaking tournament. You know what I mean? I need to get this monkey off my back. And it was just evidence of if you put your mind to something, you can get it done. And this final against Albin, I had to shake off so many demons from lost finals. It was, if you look back, I mean, I was just playing myself basically in that match, and he got ahead in that game. I think it was like 8-6 or whatever. And I said, if I don't catch up now, I'm not going to win this match. I have to win from here or I'm going to be lost. You know what I mean? And I managed to turn it around, and it was just, it was just the most relieving feeling ever. Yeah. It was great. So that tournament was the biggest tournament for me ever to win. Absolutely.
So we had discussed a little bit before we actually jumped on air. You were a little burnt out when the kind of COVID shutdown happened, because you said you were playing some really good pool. You felt like you were really prepared, and you were in Las Vegas for the Diamond Open. And if I'm not mistaken, I think you played your first match and then you bowed out of the tournament from there. And I guess going back to 4 months or whatever it was, I claimed on the podcast that this is going to be the greatest 3-week stretch of pool in the entire year, because you're looking at the Diamond Las Vegas Open, you're looking at the Predator World 10 Ball, and then you're looking at the U.S. Open to follow. I mean, those are 3 of the biggest pool tournaments in a year, and you are,
and the World Pool Masters.
Yes, and the World Pool Masters. So you're looking at the greatest stretch of pool probably all year long, and you think you're playing real good, you're feeling good. And then can you take me through your thought process as you're jumping back on the plane to basically stop the next month of your plans?
Well, it was so sudden for me because the corona situation, it was escalating so fast. It was just beyond grasp, really. And I mean, I was checking the news and every half hour things were just popping up. Like, what is going on here? Like, so many people dying in Italy. And then all of a sudden we heard there was a case in the Luxor. And then Trump comes out with this message of the lockdown. And then Scandinavian Airlines, they come out with a message that they're not going to fly back into Europe. And I'm flying Scandinavian Airlines back home. So now I'm thinking, what the hell's going on? And my dad calls me up at 1 at night in the hotel room. And this is the day of my first match. I just won that match. And he doesn't call me up for nothing. You know, I've had big decisions in my life, like selling my house. We communicated. So he's not going to call me for nothing. And he was already communicating with my wife, checking out Scandinavian Airlines. He said, did you hear about the lockdown? Blah, blah, blah. So I'm waking up Ivar Saris, who was my roommate, and we get together with the team leader, Hugo Duivenvoorde from Holland, and we have like this SOS meeting back home with the Federation. It's like, what are we doing? You know what I mean? Are we staying? Are we? What's happening? We're stuck here with 5,000 players, and they have a case at the Luxor. So, I mean, this thing can wave over pretty quick. And when Scandinavian Airlines wasn't giving us clear directions for how to get home and all the flights were selling out, I said, listen, I can get stuck here. I have two young kids and a wife. I'm going back home. This doesn't mean enough to me to get stuck in the US for 3 months. I'm leaving. So I booked a return trip for like $700 through Canada and London. And I got back home and it was just the day I got home, the Danish prime minister comes on TV and she says, all Danish people or people that live in Denmark are summoned to return to Denmark because of the corona. So I'm like, okay, whew, I think I made the right decision. And yeah, that was just crazy. And then everything starts locking down. And yeah, it just the air came out of me. You know, I felt like, okay, why would I continue practicing now? Everything's locked down. There's no tournaments. The World Tembo got canceled. Everything started to get canceled. And it was like, okay, I'm switching to plan B, which was the course from yeah. there.
So there's one more question I'd like to, I guess, cover here. And so you said earlier, you're 43, you're a veteran, you're not green to the game anymore. So I'm looking at players like Fedor Gorst or Eklanti Kaci or, you know, U.S. players like Sky Woodward, and they're pretty new to their career still, right? I mean, they've been on the scene for a couple of years, but they're not as established as a player like you who, you know, you've built a career, you've been smart with your money, I would assume anyways. you're not relying on basically this pool income to fund your life because you've been smart enough throughout your life that you've been able to set yourself up for something like this. But what do you think would have happened if this would have happened when you were, let's say, 23 in the U.S. for the very first time? How would you grind through a living where you can't actually make money in the way that you're supposed to be?
Well, my main income is still coming from the pool world. I'm lucky enough to have great sponsorships, and we have support from the Dutch Olympic Federation or committee. But the World Tembo event was one of the events where we would have to defend our Olympic status to support ourselves for the next year. So I'm flying back home knowing that I'm giving up that spot. So now we have to wait for the next chance to get that, which will be the European Championships in November. But I was, I mean, I can take a hit like this for 6 months, but if I would be early 20s, I think it wouldn't as much be the money, but it would be not being able to compete. Because if you're an upcoming pro and you want to establish yourself and you're hungry and you want to compete against the best players and now you're locked down like a tiger in a cage, I think that's the most frustrating part. right? You can eat bread and water or drink water for weeks instead of going out for sushi dinners, so you can save some money there.
Yeah, right.
But it's the vibe of not being able to compete and get out there and show what you have and break through and having to wait 6 months or longer before you can play a big event. I think that's what's going to be tough for the youngsters now, that restlessness.
Yeah. So I guess you'd kind of given the hint for it. You are, well, first off, I'm glad that you came on because I've been, you know, I've been watching you for a lot of years and I really, really respect your game, both on and off the table. So I'm happy to be able to talk with you regardless. But the main reason we're bringing you on today is to talk about your course, which you have now, I guess the COVID, one good thing about the COVID is you got it launched. So it's out and it's out and it's available to, well, maybe let's just open it up to you. Tell us a little bit about your course and I guess who is it meant for?
The course is meant for any pool player at any level. I mean, a total beginner, I would not recommend it yet. It's for competitive players, so people that compete in leagues, tournaments, people that feel that they can get better, that want to get better, competitive people. And I was studying the pool world for many years, of course, and I was always working hard on the mental side of the sport with meditation, visualization, reading books, taking one-on-one classes with like sports psychologists, personal development training, all kind of good stuff like that for the last 20 years. And I'm thinking everybody in the pool world is saying the game is 80-90% mental, right? And nobody's doing anything. There's nothing really out there. There's no program. People have no clue where to begin. They have no clue how long to train, what to train, how to train the mental side. So I'm thinking for years already, like, I know a lot about this and I want to bring this out. I want to share this, right? And I was already starting in January with making an outline. And I had all the chapters ready. I had all the lessons prepared, but I didn't have the time to make all the videos and stuff. And then I came home from the corona situation from Vegas. And after a few weeks, I said, I'm going to hammer this. I'm going to go full force now and make all the videos, study all the software, and just dive head deep into it. You know what I mean? And I got it done. And I was first I came out with the free course, which was also a giveaway for all the pool players, the goal setting course. And then after that, I came out with the main Mental Edge for Competitive Pool Players. And it's super, super cool. I'm very proud of it.
Yeah. So take us through the course itself. What does it offer? And what is somebody struggling with? Maybe they've been stuck at the same level for 6 or 7 years and they want to get better. They just don't know how. Take us through your course and tell us how it would help a player like that, or really any player, get themselves to that next level.
Yeah, I mean, you see a lot of players are struggling with frustration, expectations, which is massive. They're struggling with mental space. They're too cluttered up in their mind because of society nowadays. We get just bombarded with inputs, so our concentration is taking a big hit. And people lose confidence because of that, because they just don't see any improvement. And now you get like more frustration because you want to get better, but you're in this vicious circle, right? And that's why I made it in four steps. The first step is the mental foundation. So it's got all kinds of lessons about how you can build a stronger mental game. We're looking at creating mental space. We're looking at how pressure works, four phases of pressure. So it's studying. We're looking at meditation, visualization, all kind of good stuff to build you up, basically from the ground up, to get you strongly focused, give you more mental energy. And then we're going to the competition side. We're going to look at the pre-match preparation, so like an hour before your match, what you can do, right? We're looking at different characters. Everybody's different. You have these people that are in the practice room. They're talking to everybody. They got to get that nervous energy out. And then you have other guys that want to be totally peaceful and quiet, listen to music, you know, build their focus up that way. So we're looking at cool stuff with that. And then we go into the match. And There's two things I go over in the mental match play. That's the mental traps. For example, expectations, right? People fall into the expectations trap again, like, oh, I should beat this guy easily, or I've been training really hard, so I should be playing good. Like everything with should, right?
Yeah.
And so we're turning expectations into goals. And on the other side, we have tilt. So people, they make a mistake, boom, they go into full tilt because I've been practicing hard and how can I miss this ball? You have entitlement tilt, equipment tilt.
Been there.
bad luck tilt, opponent tilt. Like people you've played 20 times, right? You get into this whoop, this energy field with this player that you've played so many times. Stuff like that, super cool stuff. And then we ended with after the match. Or after the tournament, we go into like a feedback section, post-match stuff. So I've made really good feedback loops that you can work with. Takes you 10, 15 minutes. You can analyze your tournament or your match. And you don't have to get stuck in your hotel room and talking to people like, oh, I've missed that ball and now you're sick for 2-3 hours. No, you analyze what was the result. What did I do? What did I learn? How can I improve that for my training next time? Boom. 15 minutes and you can have a great day. And then there's some real cool bonus material like book list, an event scheduler, how you can plan your events, stuff like that. So, and then probably we have a workbook, not to forget, workbook. There's quick learn guides after every chapter. And I can imagine after a course, people have some questions for themselves, like what can I do with this? And for that, I put in 30 minutes of Skype one-on-one with me. So we can go over your personal situation one-on-one and take you a step further. So it's a great total package. It's very complete.
Yeah, and I think my favorite part about it is that post-match stuff. There's a lot of people that like to talk about, I guess, how to get ready for matches, right? And that's a lot of people's favorite question. On Facebook, it seems like they're either asking you what shaft you're playing with or how do you get ready for a match, right?
Right, yeah.
So that's true. A very popular question, and it gets addressed a lot. I think that there's a lot better than other people that are able to answer that question. But very, very few people actually are talking about how to actually, let's say, watch a recorded video of them playing a match under high-pressure situations. And very few people are talking about how you can actually analyze that to help yourself for the future. And actually, this is one of the questions I wanted to ask you, because I listened to the Mike Howerton interview that you did, and you said that you don't even like going back and watching yourself play. So you don't know how many Moscone Cups you've won because you don't like to go back and watch them, right? is part of that because you don't like watching yourself play because you nitpick mistakes? Or is it, you know, why don't you like to watch yourself play, I guess?
I don't know. It's just... I basically have other things I want to do. I want to study other players or other matches I haven't seen yet. I study myself when I have situations that I didn't figure out what I should do. Then I go back to that rack, maybe take a picture. I've did that with Alex lately a lot. You know, we send each other situations, one pocket situations, like, what would you do here? Stuff like that. Then I think it's interesting. But just for entertainment value, just to watch back my own match, no, I don't need that ego trip. It's just not really me. I'd rather go practice or hit the bike and go for a nice ride.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's not that, but I think there is great value in studying yourself if you're stuck on stuff, like, or if I'm questioning myself maybe technically, like, how did I did something 5 years ago with my break? Boom, then I can go back into matches, right? Study my break. I've done that many times. Or how was I playing that kind of bank or position? Then I just go back maybe for a couple of shots, but not really full matches. Yeah, I don't know. If I also have young kids, so it's maybe also the time factor. I just don't have those oceans of times to just sit and binge watch the whole time.
Whenever I go back and watch my matches in the past, I'll watch myself and I'll be like, wow. How did I play this pattern so poorly? and I could just sit there and watch the match on a computer screen and I can see exactly the pattern I should have played, the one I played, and I could just sit there and nitpick. But the way that you do your program is you actually teach yourself how to watch yourself and learn from it then, right?
Yeah, Yeah, you can go back to matches, of course, and analyze the situations that you had trouble with. Maybe a push out, you had no clue where to push out. But of course, this is more technical side and a tactical side of the game. And in the course, of course, I go more over the mental side. So you can go back to the match and maybe think, here I should have taken perhaps a timeout, or I can clearly see that I wasn't ready for my match because I didn't start well. So maybe I can try to do something different in the moments leading up to the match. I got distracted maybe in the match, something happened. You know, that could be interesting for the mental side. And what was interesting, just as an example, my neighbor, he used to be a top handball coach. And I was visiting him last week at a camping, and we were going over some of his career. And I said, can you give me a cool example of some exciting stuff? And he said he had a goaltender or a goalie, and right before they went out for their match, they had this hype talk in the dressing room, like now is the time, now we're going to do it. And this guy couldn't handle it. Like those final moments, he got too jacked up, and he would start his match really poorly because he was too hyped. And what they did, they spoke about this because he sensed this, like there's something wrong with my player. They spoke about it. He told him, like, I get too hyped. And the solution was they would put him in the bleachers 10 minutes before the match. The others would go back in, do the hype. He would just chill there in the bleachers. Then he would start the match, and he played great. So that's a great way to analyze your mental game, right? I thought it was fascinating when I heard this. I said, man, I learned something there. That's amazing. And so, you know, everybody's different. Some people love that hype. Also in the Moscone, there's five players, and some love the hype and some really don't. They want to focus on staying relaxed. And, you know, everybody has their own values and stuff that they need to get ready for themselves. So that's why it's interesting. The course is 33 videos and slideshows. And so there's plenty of stuff in there about this. Super cool.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, you have Albin Ocean and, you know, a player like yourself who you couldn't, when you're playing, it looks like you couldn't be bothered to be anywhere else in the world. Like, it's just kind of like, whatever. But then you have players like Billy Thorpe and Jason Shaw and Joshua Filler that are, you know, jumping up on the tables and having a grand old time. And that's what that's absolutely needed in the Moscone Cup.
Because
it's a production just as much as it's an actual serious match. So,
sure.
Yeah, that is always a lot of fun for the crowd, is to have those characters that get everybody involved.
Yeah, they have that mix, right? Some guys are really stoic and other guys are super explosive. And, you know, there's something for everybody. If everybody would be explosive, it wouldn't be cool to watch either. Then it'd be just a crazy show. But because everybody is, like, different, then you respect everybody. It's like, oh, he has really cool stuff with this, and he's really fun to watch with that, you know? And then that's your team. That's why you love him.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so if anybody's interested in this package, where would they go to find it?
Terminator-college.com.
Okay,
and then
I'll link that in the podcast description as well to make it easy.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's that's pretty much that leads you to the school main page, the opening page. You scroll down and you see both courses, and you can have a look at both courses. There's a ton of information, testimonials from players like Darren Appleton, Fedor's in the course, Fedor Gorst.
Johan.
Scott Frost, Johan did testimonials, you know, they've all looked at it. So it's really, really great. And then there's the intro video that's on there, and frequently asked questions. So ton of information.
Yeah. So I will have that linked in the show description for convenience for everybody. And I will also make it on the Facebook post that I make. But so I guess we can wrap it up kind of with this discussion here is you were a little bummed out that the whole COVID situation happened right at the peak of the pool season, basically. Where are you at mentally now as far as the future of your career, and what are you looking forward to next?
Well, I think...
Maybe I should say besides beating up on Jim Telfer.
Tomorrow morning, right? Yeah, I got a match with Jim Telfer tomorrow. He's playing 9-ball ghost and I'm playing 11-ball ghost. So that should be That should be great.
Shouldn't he be playing like a 4 or 5 ball ghost?
Oh, you're going to get crushed for that one.
That's okay.
No, Jim's a really solid player, actually. You wouldn't say it if you see him in the crowd at the Moscone, but he's actually a really good player.
Yeah, he looks like some homeless guy who's just like crowding around the cool players. Like what is this? Yeah. What is this weirdo guy doing here? But he plays good.
He plays good. He saves up all his money all year to go crazy at the Moscone, and he deserves it. And then after that, he starts running racks again like a maniac. So no, that's gonna be fun, but. Yeah, I think right now what I'm monitoring most is the travel situation. You know, borders are opening up a little bit left and right, but the flying, the long distance flying, is still very vague with the corona and the safety and ventilation in the aircrafts. So there's not any 100% direction. Like, okay, we're going 100% for this, or we're staying home 100%. So I'm still testing the water, see what's happening. I also followed the tennis world a little bit, saw some comments there. But basically, the first competitive big thing is in October's Euro Tour in Austria, followed by the European Championships in November in Turkey. That's what's on the calendar for me right now. So I'm just I've improved my live stream situation at home. So it's fun to do some streaming, have some challenge games, you know, to keep it interesting. And, you know, just stay tuned with your game, work on some weaknesses, keep it interesting. And then, of course, when August, September starts coming up, then we're starting to really build it up towards October. And, we just have to take it one week at a time for overseas activities. I don't think the U.S. International is going to happen. And China Open's probably off the calendar. I don't know anything about the Matchroom events yet, the Whirlpool Masters. So, you know, as of now, just stay in tune with my game. And then when there's more news, then really start intensifying things. But that will also go automatically because you get that sense of urgency towards October. So just take it natural. Don't force it. And you know, it's nice to spend some time with the family longer now. I'm going on holiday and, you know, the weather's nice. So it's this different dynamic, and it's going to change, of course, again towards the end of the year. So, yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, I think the first event that's on the calendar in the U.S. right now is the first weekend of September, and I think that's the Texas Open.
Okay,
and I think that's the first event that I'm seeing on the calendars as far as a quote unquote real event. So it'll be interesting to see if anything comes up before that, or even if that is able to happen. Is, you know, we're all kind of shooting in the dark here.
Yeah, and have you heard anything about Pat's event, the International?
I have not.
Yeah, I think everybody would like to know what the status is, and also the safety status is most important for international travelers.
Of course. It's, and I do plan on being there as well, so I'll have to say hi to you
if
goes on.
Yeah.
I won't be so scared this time now that I've actually talked to you.
No game phase.
Yeah. Well, why don't you take the last couple seconds of the interview here to thank some of the sponsors that have gotten you to this point in your career?
Yeah, of course, my longtime friends at the Longoni factory, Pierluigi and his lovely family. And then we have ProStar Tables, which have helped me a great deal. Then Kamui, Masato and his staff, Tomomi and all the people in Japan, great people. And then, of course, Hake 5 from The Hake, the pool room. They're sponsoring me now. That goes back to the roots. So that's awesome. And, of course, the Dutch Olympic Federation or Dutch Olympic Committee. I never meet those people ever, but they've supported me tremendously also financially over the years. If I perform well, I have to perform to win that status. And, of course, the people at the Dutch Federation for, helping the players out over the years. So, without that help, you can never do it. You know, people always think you can do it alone, but you need people behind you. You need to speak to people, and you need help from people to build a pool career. That's just the way it is. It's not a millionaire's business or world. So if there's people willing to support you, you have to respect that and appreciate it dearly. So once again, thank you.
Yeah, nobody wins enough in this game to do it without sponsors, really.
No.
there's
not really.
Those prize funds just aren't quite big enough. But
yeah,
that's what we're working towards, right?
We're exactly.
Trying to get there.
Yeah, hopefully.
Well, Niels, this has been an absolute pleasure. I've always been a big fan of yours.
Thank you.
Tyler Steyer and I grew up, basically, we're the same age just about, so we grew up playing together. And he's always been like the biggest fan of yours. And between chatting with him and really hearing the glowing things that he has to say about you, it made me a big fan too. So I'm really glad that I was able to chat with you today.
Cool. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And you're welcome.
Until next time. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Bye, guys.
Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening. If you've liked what you've heard and you want to contribute to the future content that will be made, consider joining the podcast's Patreon at www.patreon.com/queueitup. Becoming a Patreon of the podcast will help to create all of the future content that the podcast will have. Special shout out to Dave Peters, Aaron Taylor, Pete Silsby, Morgan Lupton, Ben Young, Robert Miller, Andy Morse, and Bill Pelham for your generous contributions to the podcast's Patreon. If you ever need any more information on what the Patreon system is or how you can contribute outside of the Patreon, please reach out to the podcast or Nate himself. If you would like to contribute to the podcast for free, consider sharing any podcasts or the podcast page on Facebook itself. Also, leaving a review and a rating if you listen through iTunes. It helps others find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Cue It Up podcast.